This is the Horse Radio Network.
What a beautiful day for horses in the morning.
Well, good Thursday morning, everybody. I am Glenn the Geek from Ocala, Florida.
And I am Kim Baker from Denver, Colorado, and you are listening to a special episode of The Kim Baker Show on the Horses in the Morning on the Horse Radio Network for July 23rd, episode 1219. This episode is brought to you by BioStar US. Good morning, Horse World.
Where are we going today, Mr. Peabody?
And I'm feeling good.
Welcome to the special monthly Kim Baker episode on Horses in the Morning, where our clever co-hosts explore the amazing connection between horses, animals, and humans.
Well, good morning, everybody. Thank you for joining us on Horses in the Morning this morning. Kim is here on the fourth Thursday of every month, which I can't believe it's that time of the month again. And she is here every month that day, and we have a lot of fun. And we, Kim and I don't get to talk in between shows, so we're almost always late for the show because we're just blabbing away before the show starts, and we almost forget every time. But we're here. We made it.
We made it.
How are you, Kim?
I'm doing well, Glenn. How are you doing?
I'm doing terrific. And you have a great show planned for today. Jennifer's going to tell us what's coming up on today's show.
On today's Kim Baker episode by BioStar US, Glenn and Kim are going to sort through the medicine card deck and enjoy the fun and frivolity that follows pulling an unfortunate member of the animal community out of that deck. And listener Leilani is going to join us for her reading of her horse, Lamb Chop. Oh, I can't wait. And then Carol Kaur stops by to discuss caring for aging pets. Lots of us have those. And then we'll round it out with a little talk about polo ponies. And maybe we'll find out why so many of them are mares.
I wonder how many horses are named Lamb Chop. It's just a great name for a horse, Lamb Chop.
It is. It's a very interesting name.
It's a fun name. We're going to have to find out from Leilani how the horse got the name Lamb Chop. Or maybe we don't want to know. It depends what the story is.
Right. You never know with stories like that on how people get nicknames and different things like that.
Hey, can I do one quick shout out before we start the show? Because it's kind of a running gag here on Horses in the Morning, and I have to do this. Let me see if I can find the name of the person. I'm looking for it. Okay, so I have to give a shout out to Heather Curry. Heather, thank you so much for clarifying for us this time. Yesterday, I posted the infamous picture of Jamie, Jennifer, and I at the Kentucky Horse Park. And if you scroll down on Horses in the Morning's Facebook page, Kim, you'll see it. I post this picture occasionally because it always gets somebody up in arms. And it's me sitting on a donkey, and right. Jennifer's pushing the donkey, and Jamie's pulling the donkey.
Uh-huh.
Except that it's very clearly a statue.
Yeah, right. It's not a donkey. It's not a real donkey.
Every time I post it, and this time was no exception. Well, let me read exactly what was said. Please tell me that man is photoshopped on that ass and not actually on it. Please. It happens every time. And Heather, I can tell you're a listener because Heather said, it's a statue, Janet, so no real asses were hurt in the making of the photo. And we have said that 100 times on the show. Every time we post this picture, we get that comment. And it has never failed in the 5 years we're doing this show, every single time. So thank you.
That is hilarious. So I think that shows how quickly we are moving in our space, that we look at a picture quick enough and don't realize that it's a statue.
And besides, if it was a donkey, I would have been bucked off. So those little donkeys are tough.
They are. Yeah. They are tough.
There's no way I'm winning in a little donkey battle. So.
They don't put up with guff either.
No, there's no way it would have allowed us to do that. Jennifer would have been kicked. She was in the back. I would have been bucked off, and Jamie would have been bit. So
there you go.
That donkey would have won that battle. So, oh, well, I'm sorry. I just had to clarify that.
Well, that's funny. I posted a video that was going around on Facebook on my KB Natural Horsemanship page. And it says, this is why you ride mules in the Grand Canyon. And there's a guy riding a mule, and he jumps up on, and it looks to me like one of those like construction barriers, you know, that they put in like the center of a highway. And I kid you not, the mule jumps up on top of that and then jumps down, and then they continue down the trail. Like, okay. I'm like, anybody else want to try that? That's pretty crazy.
We did an interview with that guy who runs the concession there at Grand Canyon. We're hoping to meet him when we go out. And, you know, in all the years they've been doing that, they've never had one of those donkeys or mules come off that trail. And, you know, it scares horse people that do it because they know what horses do. So apparently he said it's much better when non-horse people do it because they're just sitting there. Jamie did it. And she said she'd never do it again.
Really?
It's too scary because horse people are trying to, you know, steer. Instead of just sitting there and letting the donkey do the work.
Gotcha.
So that's why she said she'd never do it again. It was too scary.
Oh, I'd like to do it. I think it'd be fun.
I don't know. I'm not brave enough. Jennifer and I talked about it, whether we do it when we went out. Just not. Again, because, you know, I have a bolting pony. So I just have that in my mind as I'm riding the donkey down the trail.
For me, it has nothing to do with being on a mule. I have a bad case of scared of heights. I'm not walking down that trail either. I'm sorry. Just not doing it. Not getting that close to the edge of anything.
There you go.
Well, let's do our medicine cards for the day.
All right. Who's going to pull the card? Glenn or Jennifer?
I think Jennifer did last time, so I'll do it this time.
Okay.
Or why don't we have you pull it this time?
Okay. What is our most important message that we all need to hear this morning? So I pulled the horse card.
Oh, really? Well, that's convenient. It's the first time since we'd started this show.
I pulled it in reverse.
So we're at the back end of the horse?
Well, we were talking about asses this morning.
Yeah,
so
right.
We might as well just keep going.
We're going to have a theme today, apparently.
Okay, so horse represents power, and it's a rather long story. In the upright position, basically it talks about a medicine man that comes across and all these different colored stallions approach him and what they mean. A black stallion, a yellow stallion, a red stallion, and a white stallion. And in understanding the power of the horse, you may see how to strive for a balanced medicine shield. So if you understand anything about Native American and medicine shield, you know, those are the colors that represent the different worlds and environment and things like that. So true power is wisdom found in remembering your total journey. Wisdom comes from remembering pathways you have walked in another person's moccasins. Compassion, caring, teaching, loving, and sharing your gifts, talents, and abilities are the gateways to power. So in reverse, this is what the card means. If your ego has gotten in the way, you may have failed to notice the lack of respect you have been receiving from others. You may, on the other hand, be struggling with others who are abusing their power. Should I say something? Should I fight my desire to put them in their place? You may be asking. Remember the times in your own life when you have fallen out of grace with great spirit. And then have compassion for the brothers or sisters who are now doing the same. If you are overpowering another or feeling overwhelmed, horse medicine in both the dignified and contrary position is a simple reminder of how to balance your shields. In allowing all pathways to have equal validity, you will see the power and glory of the unified family of humanity. This is the gift of the rainbow warrior or warrioress. The I has no place in this whirling rainbow that comes from the great mystery and is replaced by the universal we. All colors of the rainbow and all pathways are honored as one. Apply this knowledge and reclaim the power you have given away by forgetting to come from compassion. untangle yourself from the present situation and understand that every human being must follow this pathway to power before galloping upon the winds of destiny.
Isn't that interesting that the horse card by Native Americans is really relating the horse to what we use the horse for today when it comes to therapy?
Exactly.
You know, it's very interesting.
Well, and I think, horses are the master teachers. You know, we learn so much from them. And compassion is huge. And that is one of the biggest things that's lacking in the world today. No one has compassion for their fellow person, for their fellow creature, for their blade of grass, you know, for the trees, for the air, for the water. At least that's my personal belief.
Well, now let's go from that to an inspirational message.
Okay. Believing. More persons on the whole are humbugged by believing in nothing than by believing in too much. And that's by P.T. Barnum.
Oh, really? Well, that's an interesting statement by him, too.
Yeah.
Interesting. Say it again.
More persons, on the whole, are humbugged by believing in nothing than by believing in too much.
Mm. That is an interesting statement by him, who believed in everything, you know, so...
right.
Yeah. He's an interesting man, actually. I know a lot of people that are against circuses and stuff, but he was, you know, it was all about the show, not necessarily what the show was. He had many different things he did before the circus started. You know, he's an interesting guy. I read a book on him once, he just was an interesting entrepreneur.
Yes.
Yeah. All right. Well, let's do this. You have an adoptable horse.
Yes. She is a 2-year-old filly. Her name is Elsa. She was recently started under saddle in the Harmony Equine Center training program. She's coming along nicely and shows potential to go in any direction. She'll make a great project for anyone looking for a willing partner. She's up to date on her vaccinations, deworming, farrier, and teeth work. She's available at the Dumb Friends League Harmony Equine Center, which is open to the public Friday through Sunday from 11 to 3, except for major holidays. And the Harmony Equine Center is located in Franktown, Colorado, which is just south of Denver. Learn more about all of the animals available for adoption at ddfl.org. That web address again is ddfl.org. And Miss Elsa is a beautiful bay. I don't see any white markings on her in this picture at all, but she has a beautiful long mane, very shiny, and she just looks like a pretty good pony.
Yeah, she is cute. I'm looking at your picture on your Facebook page. If you go to Kim Jones Baker, you'll find a picture there, and she is very cute.
Yep, she's a cutie pie, so she's only 2, so she's got lots to learn and lots to grow with.
She's short-coupled, too. Did you notice how short-coupled she is?
Yeah.
But she'll grow into the... I mean, she'll grow a little bit. She's only 2.
Yeah.
Where does the
goofy.
Is the Dumb Friends get their horses from rescues at, you know, with the authorities, or how does that happen?
Yes, it's all law enforcement seizures. Okay. So, if that could be a rescue, that could be an individual, you know, that is hoarding or, you know, starving or, yeah. So it's all law enforcement seizures. So they're not open where you can just go and drop your horse off.
Very good. And I know Jamie posted one yesterday too that got a lot of comments. One that hit the MASH unit in Arizona and Phoenix had rescued, and, you know, all the comments on there were interesting. And, you know, but these horses can come back, as my pony attests to, is now fat and happy and can barely walk. So they can come back from that. They just have to be brought back slowly. And this one doesn't look in too bad a shape, though. This one looks in really good shape, actually.
Yeah, well, they have quite their program there. You know, they have an intake barn. So it's kind of like quarantine. You know, they go and and get checked out and see what's going on and go through, they have like an obstacle course and some other things to assess kind of where they're at. So they determine where they go in the training program. And then based on that, they're placed, and after they've been there for, I believe it's like 6 weeks, then they get moved over to the main barn, the adoption barn, and then they're in the training program if they're, you know, healthy and mentally able to do so. And then, like they said, they're open Friday through Sunday, and so people can come down and take a look and watch and see what's going on. They've got lots of volunteers, so it's a great organization. You know, Dumb Friends League has been around for, I think it's like 110 years, and they started with, they are a small animal shelter, so they've got dogs, cats, and other rabbits and things like that, and so you can go and drop your dog or cat off if need be. They do euthanize. So they are not a no-kill shelter, but they've been very successful to be around for 100-some years.
Very cool. All right. Well, Kim is kind enough once a month to do a reading, an animal communication reading, with one of our listeners. And you know, when we started this a long time ago now, I was not a huge believer. And we had that discussion right before we even started doing this episode. But now you've kind of converted me, and I'm getting more on board here, Kim. So it took a few times of the listeners saying, "Well, that's exactly right." And then I get emails and notes after saying she was so on the money. So we have Leilani on here this morning, who's a listener of ours. We're going to meet her here quick. Good morning, Leilani.
Good morning. Hi, Glenn. Hi, Kim.
Am I saying that right? Am I saying your name right?
Leilani, yes, you are. Thank you.
Okay, good. I just wanted to make sure I had that right. All right, so Leilani, you have a horse named Lamb Chop. We have to know how this horse got its name.
I really don't know. I adopted him 5 years ago, and he actually came with that name, but he is really scared of sheep. I was told that when he was young, he would chase sheep around the ranch and try and chop them up.
Oh, wow.
So, who knows?
Okay. Tell us a little about yourself. What kind of riding you do?
I do English and Western, and mostly we just do recreational riding with him. We like to take him trail riding. We live here in beautiful Sonoma County, California.
Oh, wow.
And so there's all kinds of trails around here, and the vineyards, and up in the mountains and hills and forests, and it's a beautiful place to ride.
Well, first, thank you for getting up at 6 a.m. to talk to us. We appreciate that. And Lamb Chop.
Oh, man, now I know how Jamie feels.
And Lamb,
how does she do this every
Kim
morning?
And Lamb Chop is what kind of horse?
He's a purebred Arabian. He's about 17 years old now.
Okay, very good. Well, all right, Kim, take over here.
All right, so Leilani, you had quite a few questions, so I didn't get through all of them because Lamb Chop had a lot to say. So
Arabians always do.
So if that's something that you want to follow up on after the show, just let me know. When I first connected with him, he starts shaking his head like up and down, you know. How horses will do that sometimes. And I just thought that was kind of cute. So I didn't go quite in the same order that your questions were listed, but I went to the pain one first. So it's typically just what I do in the sessions. And so when was the last time his teeth were floated?
He gets them floated regularly, and he was just checked. I was told that he doesn't need them floated right now.
Okay, because what he was showing me was that he has a few sharp points on the left side of his face in the back with the molars, and then chiropractically he's got the left shoulder out, a couple of right ribs are out, his right hip is out, and then it looks like he might have a little bit of arthritis in the right hock and the left front knee.
Right hock and left front knee, huh?
Yep.
Okay.
So I don't know if you have him on a joint supplement or if you've noticed anything along those lines.
I do not have him on a joint supplement at the time, but you know, he might be after this.
Okay. So, like I said, he has a lot to say. Like I mean, he just was like busting to just. I mean, I couldn't even keep up. He was just babbling on so fast. I'm like, okay, you got to slow down. He has a very big personality, and then the other thing I noticed that I was looking at his legs and his feet, and the rest of his body, and he might be slightly metabolic. I'm not quite sure what's going on. He's not foundering or anything like that, but there's something there. And I'm not quite sure exactly what that is. But yeah, so I don't know if you've noticed if he's been tender-footed at all, or anything like that.
He just got trimmed.
Okay. Okay. Well, maybe.
He's got pretty hard feet, and he seems pretty, he's always pretty stable that way.
Okay. Well, sometimes, you know, even the best fighters can trim a little short sometimes, so maybe that's all that it is.
Maybe.
There's the possibility of slight ulcers, but what I really got a sense was that he could just use a good detox. So if you could get some diatomaceous earth or go get some chia seeds, and just kind of clean out his system, that would make a big difference for him.
Thank you.
Other than that, he looks pretty good. So maybe a little chiropractic work and some joint supplements and a good detox.
Excellent.
Yeah. And then you had to ask some specific questions about like behavior, rearing, bucking, cinchy. He's being cinchy. So he said that the saddle pinches him on the left side, and it's behind the shoulder. So you want to make sure, I don't know where the saddle's sitting, but I think it might be a little bit too far forward on the shoulder blades, so make sure that it's clearing the shoulder blades. And that would work. I don't know if you have a professional saddle fitter in your area, but I would find one and check and see and make sure what's going on with that saddle. Sounds like it might be a little bit too tight. But this is why he's acting cinchy. And this is why there's all the saddling issues. He's pretty sensitive. His skin's pretty sensitive. So what you're going to find is that once you figure out why it's pinching him and if you just need one that's a little bit larger, then he's still going to think that he's going to be in pain, so you're going to have to convince him that he's not in pain anymore. Do you know what I mean
by
that?
So he does. Yeah, when I sent him up, actually, several times, he's literally flipped over onto his back, like that severe. Yeah, so, and I do use different saddles, and I have different cinches. I've gone and gotten different cinches. He actually has a custom-made saddle. So his response is because he's anticipating being in pain from being pinched in the past.
Yep.
Okay.
That's it. So what I would recommend is, and you're kind of already doing this, but go a little bit slower in your cinching, like, you know, kind of do it notch by notch.
We do. And we actually take, we probably cinch them up in about 8 steps, you know.
Right.
Very, very slowly, and over a period of, you know, 15, 20 minutes, I give him all the time he needs.
Yeah, but if the underlying problem's the saddle, then even going slow with cinching is going to be, and it's still going to result in the same thing when you're done. So Jamie had one of these too. I don't know if you remember her talking about it, that would just flip over or lay down or whatever when she was cinching, and they ended up finding out it was a saddle fit issue. So
Okay,
that's something to definitely take a look at, and it's fairly common with saddles that don't work. And Jennifer also says having ribs out will do that.
Yeah, exactly.
Ribs out, yeah.
Yep, Exactly. And that's what I was just going to say, too. Yep, with the ribs out, that'll cause it, too.
The ribs out requires chiropractic.
Yes.
And excellent. We've got a really great saddle shop in Petaluma here, so I'll definitely be checking that out, too.
Okay, great. Great. And then you had asked about, like, he spooks at a bunch of different things around the ranch, he said. This was his message in regards to that. He said, the calmness needs to come from you. He's a bit insecure, but you two feed off of each other. So confidence building exercises from...
It's all your fault, Leilani.
It probably is. I don't doubt that at all.
confidence building exercises from the ground, then repeat them in the saddle.
Great. That makes a lot of sense, actually.
Okay. Yeah, he didn't go into too many details, so I'm not quite sure what's all going on there, but that's what he said. Then you had asked a specific question about a ride that you had a couple weeks ago. He said something spooked him in the bushes. Then the saddle pinched really hard because of the way he moved into it, and he got overwhelmed. He feels very bad about dumping you. He feels guilty about that.
Did you come out? Did you land on the ground?
Yeah, and thankfully this time I landed on my feet. What happened was initially he tried fucking me off before the spooking thing happened. I rode him around a couple more times. He didn't get me off. Then somebody parked near the bushes and slammed a door, and then he started rearing, and he reared three times until he did finally get me off.
So he associated that door with the bushes. Isn't that interesting?
Yeah, he's very, very smart.
Yeah. Well, you got an Arab. Yeah. So,
yeah,
they're smart.
You know, they are. They're and they're super, super sensitive. He's a pretty sensitive guy. So I think a lot of the quote issues that you're seeing, you get that saddle and you get that pain resolved, and he won't be doing this stuff at all. You know, and they just they tell you in other ways, and then if we're not listening, they get louder and they get louder and they get louder. So you'd asked, the last question that I was able to get in was about the circle game and the rearing that he does with that.
So, crazy.
So this is kind of interesting. And I have no idea what this means. So maybe you can shed some light for us, but some of it is he's showing off, he says. However, there is a deeper significance here that you are supposed to uncover. This is a hidden message for you. He said, no cheating by me telling you.
Are you kidding me?
So I have no idea. So can you please enlighten us? What does that mean?
Well,
what do you suspect?
What he does is, you know, he's being lunged and, you know, he's going around pretty well. And then I can see him getting his adrenaline up. His head gets higher and higher. And I let him switch directions if he wants to. He'll end up rearing up all the way as high as he can rear up. And he puts his two front legs straight up in the air and he clicks his hoofs together. And I mean, it does look very impressive. Very impressive. I mean, he looks...
Are there any
crazy,
cute girls nearby?
I don't know. I didn't know if he was trying to scare me or if, you know, gosh, I'm like, why do you keep doing this? Maybe he doesn't like playing the circling game. Maybe he just wants to be left alone. I don't know what he's trying to get across.
I have, and this is coming from the guy's point of view, okay? I have an answer. His name is Lamb Chop. He's kind of insecure about that whole lamb chop thing. Maybe change it to Duke. Something cool, you know, something manly. I think he's trying to say, well, hey, look, I'm not a lamb chop.
I do call him Chopper.
Oh, well, that's better. Okay, that's pretty good.
Chopper was a lot more masculine.
Yeah. So lamb chops.
His previous owner called him Lammy. I call him Chopper.
Oh, well, you know, he has insecurity complex from his previous owner calling him Lammy.
Probably.
You know, in the 5 years we've been doing this show, Kim, Jamie and I have determined something, and that is that your horse's name will determine your horse's destiny. we found that in so many cases that the horse's name, you know, like a racehorse name is Biggest Loser. And guess what? it becomes the Biggest Loser.
Well, you know, his grandsire is King Osabi, the Polish Arabian. And his registered name is Constellation. So with a K-H for Kimo Sabi.
That's kind of hard to say every day in the barn, though, isn't it?
Constellation.
Yeah.
Maybe I should be calling him that.
That's kind of hard to say, though. You know, usually you want it one or two syllables, not 20.
I didn't get a chance to get into the name thing because I know you had asked about that lamb chop, about his name and some other questions. But and he has a lot to say. So you know, if you want to go into more depth, you know, just let me know off the air, and we can talk about that. But that was
all right.
That was as far as I got with him. So I hope that's helpful and gives you some insight.
Absolutely.
Into great.
Thank you, Leilani.
Yeah, that was absolutely helpful. Very informative. I really appreciate it. And I will definitely be contacting you off air. Thank you so much, Glenn and Kim.
Thank you.
You're welcome,
I know you've been a listener for a long, long time. Thank you for that, too.
Okay, you guys have a great morning.
All right, bye-bye.
Thank you, too.
Thanks, bye.
Wow, you nailed that one.
Well, he's a cute. He's a gray Arab. And, well, you know, I'm an Arab fan anyway, so I have two of them myself.
That's true. That's
but I was right at home.
Well, you know, so many times that girthy thing, I've only learned this from doing the show and having it come up so much, is people think it's the girth and it's something under the chest or belly, and usually it's not. Usually it's back related. So,
yep.
That's something to take a look at. I'm always amazed at a number of people who do not think about having some kind of professional saddle fitter out to take a look at that.
It's the saddle fit is huge. So I'll do my 2 second soapbox here. Is you know it's like wearing shoes. Okay, if you wear a size 7 and somebody tries to put you in a 6.5 shoe, you're gonna be and make you walk 10 miles. You're going to be really unhappy. And that's basically what a small saddle will do to a horse. So if you can just imagine that, that's what your horse is feeling. On your back, then you put a person on top of that, and it just compounds. So, you know, saddle fit is really important. And the other thing is they change. They do, and it's the most annoying thing. I hate it. Saddle shopping is no fun for me because your horse changes. If you've got a young one that's growing, they change. If you have one where you're active in the summer and they're off in the winter, they change. They're different in the spring than they are in the fall. And so ideally you want one that's a little bit larger. That way you can adjust the padding based on how their body changes, whether they've got up, you know, whether they've built up their muscles or they've gone down because they've been hanging out or sitting on the couch.
Right. Well, very good.
All right.
You know, this all kind of relates, you know, well, this horse, too, was 17 years old, so she's going to be coming into some of the senior issues, passing 20 and heading to 25 here, and that's what we're talking about next.
Exactly. So, we got Carol on the line?
Yep.
Hey, Carol,
we do.
Welcome to the show.
We do. Thank you. Glad to be here.
So, Carol, you are an expert in everything elder care. You are a speaker, author, humorist, and president and founder of Carol Care, an organization created to offer resources, guidance, support, non-paid family caregivers, primarily of the elderly. So we've all been there, or we're in the process of being there, whether it's a furry or four-legged or two-legged family member as far as being, you know, caring for them. So what, tell us a little bit more about yourself, how you got into this.
Well, I was the non-paid family caregiver for elderly mom, elderly dad, and dear elderly Uncle Earl for 12 years of my adult life. And along with the rest of my life, which was full-time job and full-time wife and mother and now grandmother. And so there was not a lot of sleeping in during that period of time. I did get to know a lot about red wine, but
going to ask you, Carol, you said Uncle Earl. We all get this picture of Uncle Earl. Was Uncle Earl the one we're picturing?
Yeah. He was cute as a bug's ear. I don't know what that means, but he never married, never had any kiddos.
Yep.
And so I was sort of the kid. I was, you know, the child he never had, and just looked after him. He was my mom's brother, and moved him from back east, packed him up, moved him from an apartment that he'd lived in for 43 years, and moved him to Denver, Colorado, where he ended up having an additional 12 years of his life. So I think it was a good thing. He smiled a lot more. That was a good thing. So that's how I guess I know everything about elder care. Now, I heard you talking about horses just as I got on, and I don't know a lot about horses in elder care. But, you know, I do know a lot about older pets because I've had several of them.
Yeah, well, I mean, most of us horse people have other pets as well, dogs, cats, birds, iguanas.
I just have
a lot of different things. So just so you know, it's like, yeah, I'm kind of operating on that low sleep as well. So that's why iguanas come into play. So Carol, tell us, you know, as far as what should we be, it's as much to care for the pet and the person, but it's also important that we need to care for ourselves as well. Would you agree in the process?
Well, in fact, oh yes, clearly. In fact, that is I've just written a book called 50 Sanity Saving Tips for Caregivers. You don't have to kill yourself to keep them alive. And my very first tip is take good care of yourself first. And I say that when my daughter first read my book, she said, "Mom," she said, "you didn't do that." I said, "I know, that's why I had to make it the first tip, because I literally did almost kill myself over 12 years. Because you care so much, you start doing things for them, and then they get more involved. And then the next thing you know, all the stuff that you were doing to take good care of yourself gets kind of knocked out the back door. And, suddenly, you're in the throes of it, and there's no opportunity to go back unless you're honestly thinking about yourself and, taking good care of yourself. And there's just, you know, it's little things that you can do, but, it's very, very important.
And what are some tips, you know, that you can give us for, you know, finding that, and that's funny because at the beginning of the show, we talked about balancing your life in all
uh-huh.
areas. So that would be the key. So do you have some tips for us and how to balance that? Because a lot of us, you know, we just, I mean, there are family members, there are loved ones. We just want to give and give and give, but, you know, then we get depleted, and then we kind of run into problems. So what are some tips and how we can find that balance?
Okay. Well, so one of the big tips that I like to talk about with elder care is, you know, a lot of times all of a sudden your loved one has a lot more doctor's appointments and a lot more issues. And if they are managing those appointments, that is additional time spent for you as a caregiver. So I always tell people, take that responsibility over, take over the planning, you know, get to know the doctors, get to know whomever it is that's helping them, and start planning those appointments yourself. Why? Because they're going to affect your schedule anyway. So you might as well stick them in there so they have the least impact on your schedule. So that type
okay.
of thing is important. I talk about making sure you have the right paperwork. When people get, you know, when we all get older, there's things we need. You know, it's important to have a power of attorney. You need to have what's called a DNR, do not resuscitate. Lots of people, you know, older people think they want to stay alive at all costs, but what they don't understand is that having an adorable EMT push heavily on your chest because you're not breathing it cracks your ribs. Exactly. And so it's just, you know, life after that is really not as interesting and exciting as you thought it might be. So, you want to try to think that through. And just the other thing I talked about is having a plan. And really, I think that kind of stuff, you know, a lot of these things can apply. They're certainly not the dynamic with our pets, with our elderly pets that we have with our family members in caregiving. There's a lot of, oftentimes I see caregivers, there can be, you know, 8 or 10 siblings, and then, but they are just the one person that's really doing all the work, you know, and there's always some weird brother in Montana or something who never shows up, and mom loves him the best for some reason. And, you know, there's the other three that live in various parts of the country who zip in and out and tell you all the stuff you're not doing right. And, you know, so it's a crazy dynamic, and now you're parenting your parents. So that's really, really, it adds to the emotions and it's very emotionally charged. When we're caring for elderly pets, it's still emotionally charged, but it's, you know, luckily you don't usually have that weird family dynamic involved in it. So, you know, the good news is our pets love us unconditionally.
You know what? So. I think, and what we've found too, you know, in talking to so many people over the years in the shows, is the hardest thing about the pets is deciding when is the time to let go.
I would agree, Glenn.
That eats people. It really does. And I know we've been in that situation too. And I know I've waited too long with some of our pets. We should have done something sooner, and we didn't because of us. You know, we're really being selfish when you're doing that.
Right.
And, you know, we always say the pet will tell you, the dog, especially dogs, they'll tell you when it's time. But then do you listen? I mean, that's the hard part.
Right. That is the hard part. And so I get that a lot too, you know, as an animal communicator. That's the number one question for a pet that's passed, you know. Did I wait too long? Did I make the right decision at the right time? And of course the animal, you know, is always saying yes. And it is, but they do let you know, like you said, Glenn, are we listening? So, and then we have that ability, we have that where we're not ready to let go yet. So, Carol, do you have any tips on getting yourself? And it's a grieving process. I mean, you know, and as they start to, you know, become elderly, you start the grieving process already because you know that your time with them is limited. So, what tips do you have for us in that space?
Well, I too am an animal lover, and I too have had to deal with the loss of elderly pets. And I think back on, I had two cats that, and I'm a dog lover as well, but I travel a lot. So I have kitties because it's, you know, a lot of times it's a little easier. And I had two kitties that within 6 months of each other, both lived to be, over 23 years old. And, indoor kitties and just sweethearts. I mean, just love bugs. And here I travel a lot. And the first one I have a wonderful, wonderful pet sitter. And she said, I called her and I said, you know, I'm ready to go on this next trip. And I'm so worried. I said, we might lose this one. And she said, don't worry. It was kind of funny. We both are tall and blonde. She said, don't worry. She goes, you know, they love me. It's going to be okay. You just have to go and just, you know, we'll hope that she's going to be okay till you get back. And she said, by the way, she goes, you know, we're both tall and blonde. I think she thinks I'm you. And so, so that was, you know, a little easier, but honestly, in both cases, for both of those sweet kitties, I was traveling, and in both cases, I got back and they individually, separate of each other, 6 months died. I got back, I poured myself a glass of wine, I wrapped them up in a nice blanket, held them, and they both died in my lap.
Oh, wow.
They knew. They just knew. They knew they were waiting for me, and they didn't want to go without me. And so, You know, I think, and so that does not answer your question at all, but I thought it was a great story, didn't you?
it is a great story. So, well, and I think that that's true because people will wait too. You know, my, my grandma, she was, in the hospital and then, she's doing better. And then all of a sudden we get a call and it's like, you got to get to the hospital now. And, I don't think she was waiting for me. I think she was waiting for my dad. But she waited. And so he got there and then she went.
And it goes the other way too. Went. It goes the other way following up on, she waited in that case with my mom. She gave up. My dad died, and within 6 months, she had died, which happens so, so often with couples that they were married for 35 years or whatever. She just gave up, and she basically said, I don't want to live anymore, and she had cancer, so it was very easy for her to let go.
I think that's true. Oftentimes, I mean, with my elderly loved ones, my dear Uncle Earl, we sat up with him all night, and... you know, and then my daughter and I literally left for 2 hours to just kind of go and freshen up and come back. And that's when he left. And I said to the nurse, I said, I feel so bad because we weren't here. And she said, no, you don't understand. She said, oftentimes, she said, you had a really good long time with him before. She said, oftentimes, they don't want to go in front of you because they know it will hurt too much. So they wait right. till you're gone. And you know, and I think we see that with our pets too, you know, they know, I mean, that unconditional love that we have with our pets is so astounding. And like I said, it's not drenched inside of family dynamics. I mean, not that everybody's got some crazed, you know, emotionally charged situation. I mean, some of it's very peaceful. My mother, my daughter and I got to be there for my mother. And she passed, and it was very peaceful. It was beautiful. And you know, and yet every family is different. Every dynamic is different. But with our pets, it's just, there's these darling little furry people that just love and adore us. And that's what we get, you know, that's the finality of that. And it's so, you know, it's so sweet and beautiful. And that's the other reason I think it's so hard to decide when is the right time, because we know how special that has been, you know?
Right. Well, the other thing, too, is animals don't have the fear of death that we do, the humans do.
Yeah, they're not worried about what happens after, right?
Yeah.
Yeah,
that's true.
They're just accepting. They just know, you know, and they're graceful. They're much more graceful about it, I think.
They're really graceful, yeah.
Than humans are, and
well, that's,
you know,
why I said I think it's selfish, you know, and I'm guilty of that, too. I think it's selfish when we wait too long. It's just for us. It's not for them. You know, it really, really at that point, you know, they would rather not be in pain anymore in most cases.
Exactly.
Yeah. You know, but again, you know, I do think they tell you, and that was funny because we had the last greyhound we had was 13, which is really old for a greyhound. And we weren't sure she'd gotten sick. And then all of a sudden she got a little bit better. And, you know, we just had this friend that kept saying, she'll tell you. And then one morning we were sitting having breakfast. She walked around the corner, looked at me, and I said, today's a day. And that was it. We brought her to the vet that day. She just, that look on her face said, okay, I'm ready. You know, and they do tell you. Yeah.
They do tell you,
and you're right.
I don't know about cats. I think cats, I don't know what cats tell you, to be honest. I think they're lying the whole time, their entire lives. But that's just my opinion.
mostly just to get extra kitty treats.
Exactly.
Really bad,
exactly. Or just to make your life miserable. Yeah. I'm convinced that that's the whole sole existence for our current cat, is to make our lives miserable. That's a whole different story. I need to do a reading on this cat. Only I don't want to know what he's thinking. I really don't. I just I don't want to have any idea. So.
I love it. Yeah, he's going to slit your wrist in your sleep. That's
right. I'm convinced one of these days you watch. His name is The Beast. Does that give you an idea? That's his name, The Beast.
Oh, well, that would do it. Yes. I currently have two other cats, and one of them is 18 pounds, and you know when he comes up to sleep with you at night.
Yeah, I bet.
You know.
It'd smother you.
Oh, my God.
18 pounds, that's a very large cat.
That's a big kitty. Big, big kitty.
Do you also find that, One question here, Kim. Do you also find that people, having been in the caregiver situation with my mom, do you also find that that kids especially just don't want to do it? I mean, it's hard to care for parents. It's one thing to care for a child who's an infant, but it's you're basically going back to that infant state in a lot of cases with elderly parents. It's emotionally, physically demanding. It's just hard.
Well, so all of a sudden you are the parent of your parent. And so when I talk about family dynamics, that's one of the pieces that's included in this. And it's, you know, it depends. I mean, you can have a super great relationship with your parent as an adult, but now suddenly you're telling them what they can and can't do. You know, you're ultimately taking away the car keys. You're telling them that they, you know, they can't go out by themselves or whatever has occurred. And you know, so they're feeling resentful. Now they're feeling they're not getting to do as much stuff. They're feeling isolated. Now they're depressed. The odd thing is that, in my book, I term this as the mirror image, because oddly enough, as a caregiver, the longer you caregive, you're feeling the same things they're feeling for the different reason. You're feeling more isolated because you're doing less for yourself and more for them. And so you're not getting to do some of the stuff that you enjoy in your life. You know, you're feeling kind of resentful about this. Now you're feeling a little bit depressed, you know? And so it's really interesting how as a caregiver, we're experiencing a lot of the same feelings and emotions that loved one is feeling in their final days. And I would say, you know, in my book, I say, if you can identify that with each other, if you can take that moment in a calm moment and talk to your loved one, your elderly loved one, and share with them what you're feeling as well, what will happen is there's a commonality between the two of you. And I think it helps you both realize this is stressful for both of us. Because that's the other thing I think that happens is that the elderly person doesn't really often understand that, you know, what the caregiver is going through and what a huge impact it's making on their lives. They're just getting the results of the care, but they are not necessarily looking at how this is affecting their adult child's life. And it's devastating. It's really devastating.
You know, that's interesting that you say that because, so one of my dogs, he'll be 15 in October. And in the last, well, this year, I've had to cut our walks in half. And they seem to get shorter, you know, each month. And I don't know what he did earlier this week, but he didn't want to go up the stairs. So I was carrying him up the stairs. Now he's going back up the stairs. But I find... And it's hard for me to admit this, especially on the air, but I find that, like, I get frustrated with him, you know, and it's not his fault. Like, I mean, he has really bad arthritis in his hips, and I have him on all kinds of stuff to keep him comfortable and things. But, you know, it's like the walks are really slow. And my other dogs, I've got, he'll be 8 next month. And, you know, he acts like he's 3. So, you know, so I feel like I'm torn in two because the younger one is like ripping my arm off to go. The older one, like, you know, has to go slower and I'm stuck in the middle. And there are times when I just like, with everything else that life throws at you, it's like, I just get so frustrated and angry and it's not his fault, you know? And then I have to sit there and say, okay, you know, take a deep breath and it's okay. But he's also teaching me, too, that, you know what, it's okay to slow down. Life doesn't need to go at 90 miles an hour all the time.
Right.
And so there's lots of, you know, lessons, I think, in that. But I like what you said there, Carol, as far as, like, recognizing, you know, the emotions, acknowledging the emotions, whether it is anger or resentment or guilt or whatever it may be having, instead of just pushing them aside.
Mm-hmm. Oh yeah, you have to acknowledge what they're. I mean, think about it. They suddenly don't have the lives they used to have. They don't have the independence they had, and it's the same. You know, it's the same with your dog. He doesn't have. You know, he doesn't get to romp around like the 8-year-old dog, and
right.
That's hard, and it's you know, for any of us as we get older, there's things that we start to not be able to do as well or as fast or as on target or, you know, whatever. And then you add things like that. I mean, for even an older dog or an older cat, but you know, you add things like incontinence, stuff like that. It gets embarrassing. It gets, you know, you don't want to go out, you don't want to be around people, or, you know, suddenly now if you can't drive anymore as an elderly person, you know, that limits your opportunities. And I think we all think we're just all going to get to do this stuff. So again, the other problem is nobody really prepares for any of this stuff. It just kind of happens one day.
Right.
And I think we probably see that in our pets too. You know, I noticed that with my 18 pound, Mr. Cooper there, the cat. You know, he's a lot older than the other kitty, and he'll still run around. And yet I notice he's slowing down a little bit, and I'm like you, I get frustrated. Then I have to remind myself, but he's not as young as he used to be.
Right.
So I think that is really important.
Yeah. And I agree. And I see that too, cause I see the frustration. So, his name is Bandit, and he's a border collie husky mix. And, he's just cute as a button. He's a big old fluffy dog. You know, I mean, and the fact that he's going to be 15 in October is just amazing anyway. And, but I see, you know, the embarrassment when he can't, you know, make it up the stairs, or, he's had degenerative cataracts, since he was young. So the amount that he can actually see, I think is, you know, pretty slim. So he gets embarrassed with that too, you know, that he can't see stuff. And it's a learning process, you know, especially with the pets. I mean, at least with the, you know, with the humans, they, you know, in English verbally, they can tell you stuff. Whereas, you know, the pets are talking to you. They are talking to you. It's, you know, but there's that layer of translation, you know, and acknowledgement, you know, that you mentioned, Glenn, too, right? That are we listening? And so, you know, how can we, and it's got to be just as frustrating, right? When stuff doesn't work anymore, you know, when your hips don't work anymore and you can't see and you're bumping into stuff, like that would be annoying. So
it would be terrible. It would just be terrible, you know?
Hey.
I think it's a high level of sensitivity toward, you know, toward the older pet or the older person. It's just, you know, trying to put yourself in, you know, the old line about put yourself in their shoes. And I think that's really, really true. Or in their paws. And, you know, but really just realizing how important it is to understand what is it they're going through. And it's tough stuff, you know?
Hey, guys, we have a caller that has a unique perspective on this. One of our listeners, her name is Dr. Ellen. She's out of New York City, Manhattan, actually. Has horses and listens to our show every day and is a cancer doctor. So, you know, she is calling us right now. Are you there, Dr. Ellen?
Good morning. Yes, I am here. I'm listening to the show with a lot of interest, and everybody has really been saying a lot of important things. I'm an internist for my husband, who is an oncologist here in the city. So we do deal with the elderly. We do deal with end-of-life care, et cetera. And it's important to have a plan, as you're talking about, and compassion for the situation. And it also is important, I have an older horse, too, that I have a relationship with the vet to make sure that we're on top of things. And just talking about this issue is important. And it's nice that it's in the context of pets, in the context of the elderly. And I've also been through this with my parents, who are no longer with us, but was involved in their care, too. So
well, you probably
put a damper on it. We want this to be positive.
You see it with, I'm sure you see it with patients, you know, that are younger too. I mean, 20s, 30s, where with your parents, you kind of expect something to happen eventually, right? But you're seeing the care having to happen with patients in their 20s, you know, dealing with cancer.
Sure.
Yes, this is very true, especially with acute leukemia or lymphoma, especially here in Manhattan, because there are a lot of referrals for that. And it's always very hard when it's in younger people, But again, there is a way of dealing with it and a way of putting it in a positive light and being as proactive and prepared as one can be, either on a personal level as a doctor or even with the family. And it becomes especially important, I think, as a doctor to know how to deal with it for yourself and to prepare the family as best as possible and to be on top of all the latest protocols and to know when the patient needs to be referred to a clinical trial somewhere, et cetera. And I've also been through this with younger family members who have asked us to intervene in different parts of the states because not all my family lives here in New York. So I have unique perspective as a person, as a physician, and as a pet owner. I've had also dogs and cats my whole life, and my beloved dachshund survived and lived with us until she was about 14 and also died in my arms too. So it's an issue that is very important. It's part of life. And on the Facebook page, I had posted the last thought that I had, which is we were talking about compassion and preparation. The last thought that I had was that it's simply life. And I'm older than all of you guys, so I do have another perspective on it, having seen it and been in medicine for so many years. And again, the biggest thing I can say is talking about it, which is why when you asked me to call in, I thought it was such a great idea, because again, speaking about it is the most important thing, and preparing.
What's the biggest problem? What's the biggest issue you see the caregivers having? And it was interesting because, Carol, I was on your website. It's carolcare.net. And Carol has a statistic in here that 40 to 70% of family caregivers have clinically significant symptoms of depression. And I assume you see that happening, you know, with the care, especially with cancer that lasts such a long time in many cases.
Absolutely. You see it in the patients themselves and in the family. And again, having a dialogue about it. And again, it has to be a team approach, because it's not always the oncologist who's going to be able to help the family. It might be the social worker. It might be the internist in the group. But it has to be acknowledged. And very often there isn't. That's not paid for by insurance. It's not addressed. But it has to be. So sometimes in the office, in our practice, I might pick it up, or another staff member might pick it up and say, you know, doctor, something's going on here. Can we talk to the family? The family might be far away. And you make an effort to look at that. I don't want to keep saying the word dealing with it. I want to say recognize it and put it in a positive light, because very often that's what a family needs. Just talk to me about this, or how can we do this for the family and for ourselves? Half the battle is recognizing that there's an issue and helping.
Well, and caregivers get really lost in this shuffle. You know, and it can be, you know, as I said, this all takes such a huge toll on their lives, and it's, you know, and then it's another complete dynamic when there's cancer involved, especially if you're dealing with a young person, because you're losing someone long before you anticipated that. But caregivers, you know, what I find interesting is that so often, I mean, you're a doctor that has lived through this, and you know, you were a caregiver for your folks, and that gives you a different set of it gives you a different set of experiences and knowledge about this and what it,
yes,
a totally different perspective than what it would real, than oftentimes I've dealt with doctors who, you know, they're geriatric specialists, but they've never personally lived in the role as the caregiver, and they honestly don't really grasp what that caregiver is going through. And it's, and you honestly really can't until you've lived through that, and understand
You're absolutely right. And again, I have been a doctor for 32 years, but again, we're always learning. And my latest endeavor in our small facility is to make sure we have scheduled family meetings.
That's great.
And take the time out with the oncologist to discuss this, because if you don't, then there is a problem. and it's a problem that can be avoided. And we as doctors, we can't always predict when the end is there, but we have a sense, and preparation is just key. And yes, I would not have paid that much attention to it if I hadn't lost my parents the way I did.
Right, because you lived through it. You understood how tough that was. So now, I mean, what's so wonderful about that is that you are helping your patients and their families. So it's almost a holistic approach as far as, you know, we get that there's this disease and we're working with that and we're trying to save this person, or maybe we can't. But at the same time, we realize there's this entire, other side of all of this, which is the family dynamic and the emotions of it all. And, how this has taken a toll on everyone's lives within that family, and you're addressing that. And that's really important as doctors, oftentimes they don't.
Well, it's also important because it came up with my horse recently, who had a lameness problem for the first time in 5 years. And the question was, what was going on with him? And suddenly realizing he's older, I have different issues to address with him, with the vet, and preparing my daughter's horse. And even though my daughter is a young adult, preparing her if it was something very serious. What were we going to do? So it really comes full circle with our pets, with our horses, with our family, with our patients, be it us as doctors or nurses, et cetera. It comes back to life. And that's a part of this show also, that it's good that you address all life issues and it's not just about horses. And that's what the draw is to the show, which is why I, as a doctor, will take time out to call into this show, because it's important. So you also, as a nurse calling in, I'm listening to Glenn and Jen and Jamie. It's just simply life. And yes, so important to live it to the fullest, et cetera. Which is why I took up horseback riding in my 50s, right?
Well, thank you, Dr. Ellis, for calling in. And it absolutely is. It's death is just as much a part of life is a part of death. So it's something that needs to be addressed. Yes. And for our pets, whatever they are, horses, dogs, cats, and understanding where they're coming from. And like I mentioned before, that they don't have a fear of it. And acknowledging whoever it is in your life as a loved one, as a family member, that they have specific, wishes and wants, and enabling them as best you can to achieve those before they make that transition. So thank you so much, Dr. Ellen, for calling in. I appreciate
thank
you,
Dr. Ellen.
Thank you
much.
For listening.
Sure.
You have a wonderful day.
I will keep on listening. Now off to work.
Thank you
so much, everybody. Bye.
Thanks. Bye-bye. And so, Carol, you mentioned that you have a blog, and Glenn was on your website. So why don't you let people know about your contact information, how they can find out more information, and the things that you offer for, to support caregivers.
Okay. So my website is www.carolcare.net. And they can find my book there. We're very soon in the next month, we're starting to offer a teleseminar program where they can call in weekly if they're just, if they just need to know there's other caregivers on the line and be part of that, and almost an online support group. We offer planning sessions for families. So if suddenly mom is not doing well or dad is not doing well and you just kind of don't know what to do with the family, what are all the options? Do we try to keep her in her home? Does she need to go to assisted living? What does that cost? What do we look at? We don't have Medicare or Medicaid, or she doesn't have any resources, or we do have resources and we want to protect those. So we kind of look at all of those things and then come up with a real doable plan. So.
Great. Well, that's awesome. Well, Carol, thank you so much for being on the show. I really appreciate you taking your time to inform us about how important it is, to acknowledge what's going on and take care of yourself and finding that balance.
Well, thank you so much, Kim. I really appreciate being on the show. And big hugs to your fluffy dog.
Oh, well, thank you.
Thanks, Carol. Yeah.
Big hugs to your 18-pound cat. And your other one, too.
Oh, thank you. All right.
All right. Thanks,
Carol.
Take
care. Uh-huh. Yeah.
Thank you. You too. Bye-bye.
And now we have to go on to talking about from that serious subject to hot polo players. So that's our...
And actually, I have a bone to pick with you about hot polo players. But before that, we're going to talk about... We're going to circle back around to life and a superfood that's going to invigorate anybody's life, whether you are a human, dog, or a cat, or a horse. And so now we're going to hear from our Ask the Expert segment with Tigger from BioStar.
And now it's time for our Ask the Expert segment with Tigger from BioStar US. Tigger, how are you doing today?
Good, Kim. Thanks.
Glad to hear it. So this month, we're going to talk about spirulina. Did I pronounce that correct?
Spirulina.
Spirulina. Well, what the heck is spirulina?
It is an amazing blue-green algae.
Oh, okay. So I've been hearing about algae and that algae is good.
Oh, algae is pretty amazing.
So what...
A very old plant. It's been on the planet for about 3.6 billion years.
Okay. So it's been a... Go ahead.
What I wanted to say is it was actually part of the meals of indigenous people, like the Mayans and the Toltecs and the Aztecs.
Okay. What is it... I mean, when I think of algae, you know, I think of like the horse water tanks, right? In the summertime, you don't clean them and algae starts growing and stuff. So where does this algae come from?
So it does come from fresh water.
Okay.
It's specifically a cyanobacteria. So it's
okay.
A little different from the algae that forms in, you know, stale waters or waters that don't move much, like water troughs.
Okay, and so why is it good? Why did the indigenous people eat it?
Well, I don't think they realized this. They, you know, that they ate it because they felt it gave them energy.
Okay.
But now that we understand so much more about blue-green algae, it's a significant source of plant protein. But even more important are... its ability to draw in minerals. So it's nutrient dense. It's a great source for macro and micro minerals. But as we have studied spirulina, especially over the last 20 years, we found some very specific activities of spirulina, anti-inflammatory and antihistamine.
Oh.
Yeah. It also is a fantastic plant source of GLA. And that's something that hemp oil also has. This is where it regulates the pro-inflammatory and anti-inflammatory prostaglandins.
Okay. Well, that makes sense. And that's why it's good for us. That's why it's good for horses. That's why it's good for any being.
Especially horses with allergies, some of them do extremely well on spirulina because of its ability to block histamine release.
Okay.
Spirulina supports the immune system. It actually mediates the immune response action. So when an immune system is hyperstimulated, as in allergies, it helps to mediate it and lower the immune response. It's also very good for the metabolic horse because it has hypoglycemic effects, which help control blood glucose levels.
Right.
And for the, you know, the sports performance horses, spirulina helps spare glycogen muscle reserves. And that helps reduce oxidative stress. And when you reduce oxidative stress to the muscles, there is a reduction in muscle damage and inflammation.
Wow, this is just like, this is like one of these superfoods, right?
It is one of the superfoods.
And what is like a recommended dose for a horse? I am sure it's going to vary based on what you're using it for and what the horse is doing. Do you have just a general, like a maintenance level for, a horse that, not necessarily a top performance horse, but, a horse that, is being active several times a week?
I would say 1 to 2 teaspoons once or twice a day. For the horses with allergies, for the horses that are in, harder work, then you want to go up to a tablespoon twice a day. Biostar actually uses quite a lot of spirulina. We use organic spirulina. And it's in all our Optimum products. Every single Optimum, Biostar Optimum, has spirulina in it.
Oh, okay, great.
It's our canine Optimum. So it's one of the most fantastic foods on the planet because it's so complex. And it can do so many things for health. And its ability to deliver the minerals is really amazing because it's hard now to get enough macro and micro minerals just from the soil.
Right. And I'm guessing, the body, breaks it down really easily and it's just absorbed in the process.
So, yeah, the body identifies it immediately. And, there's no preservatives, there's no additives, there's no flavoring, which is on the plus side. And the trick with feeding spirulina is the horses say it tastes like pond scum. So you do have to introduce it slowly by the pinch. And it can take anywhere from 5 to 7 days. And once they're used to it, they'll gobble it up.
Yeah.
Throw in a full tablespoon and think that they're just going to readily eat it. You do have to introduce it slowly.
That makes sense because I use the Optimum EQ bars on my horses during the summertime when they're on pasture, and it helps them really assimilate in their transition, from hay to pasture. And
yeah.
And they love the cookies now. Like that's the first thing they eat in their bucket. But in the beginning, they looked at me like, "What the heck is this thing? I don't want that."
Exactly.
So it does take a little while, and the boys were a little more, willing to try it. My mare, she took a sniff of it and she totally turned her nose up, and I was like, seriously? But now she loves them.
and it's pretty typical that the mares are the most picky about eating spirulina. But once they get over that taste hurdle, then they eat it just as well as the geldings and stallions.
Yeah. Yeah, she loves her little cookies, and the gal that I board them with, she wouldn't let her name is Meg. She wouldn't let Meg catch her. Well, now that Meg's feeding her cookies, Meg can catch her.
And one thing we found out when we first introduced Optimum was that raccoons, possums, dogs were getting into the feed bucket and taking the Optimum bars out.
Yep.
And that's when we had an aha about dogs and spirulina. And differently from horses, you give dogs spirulina and they gobble it up.
Ah, they you know what's interesting is my barn cats would eat them. So I would take a cookie and I'd take a corner of it and I would chop it up and the cats would eat it.
Yep. Cats, raccoons, possums, dogs, squirrels. Yep, they love Optimum.
And it's great. Like I said, I use it with my ponies, and it's a great product. So I think it's just awesome. And now I have a better understanding as to why. And so You also have a blog on this as well, which is at blogbiostarus.com, and it's the Spirulina Superfood for Horses. And you said it was in all of the Optimum products from BioStar, and those are available at biostarus.com.
Yep.
And anything else that you want to add, Tigger, about this
awesome? The only thing I would say is, you know, humans can certainly eat spirulina, but we're sort of like horses. So you want to start with a small amount in, I think the best place to start is in a smoothie. And just add a pinch and then work up to a quarter and a half and a full teaspoon.
Okay.
And you're giving your body the most superfood with antioxidants and prebiotics and minerals and anti-inflammatory and, muscle glycogen support. So that's why it's a superfood, is because it covers so many critical areas of health.
Awesome. Well, thanks, Tigger. Appreciate you stopping by today and telling us about the superfood that's a benefit for all of us.
Okay, thanks, Kim.
Yeah, so superfood. I'd definitely go out and get some. I'll have to try. I wonder if I'll have to try the Optimum bars myself, see how they taste. And on to, speaking of super fun stuff, is polo. And I got to see my first polo match a couple weeks ago, which was really cool, and meet the ponies and meet the player. Got to interview the most valuable player for the Denver Polo Classic. And so we're going to hear from Roberto now.
So what's your name?
Roberto Silva.
How long have you been playing polo?
Here in the States since 2001.
And what do you love about the game?
I mean, I think it's... I don't know, it's such a special, you know, game. You mean about polo, this game?
Polo in general.
I mean, polo in general is, I don't know, it's hard to explain. You gotta taste it to feel it and to see the combination between the man and the horse.
Right.
And to be able to be like 30, 40 miles an hour in a horse,
right.
You know, it's some. And the game was close, you know, we had a bit of a slow start. And we have some lucky shots in the end, you know. But that's it. It was very close, very even.
And what position do you play?
I did play number two. That, yeah.
And for people that don't know polo, what is that? What does that mean?
Number two, it's you know, kind of the guy that need to do the dirty work on the field.
Part offense, part defense. It's in the middle.
In the
both.
Middle, and you gotta be there in the rotation, you know. And going back and forth, you know.
Okay.
I mean, number one is the one that always goes forward. Number four is the one that closes the back door. Number three is kind of the Peyton Manning of the sport. The one that need to get the ball and make the distribution of the game. And, and number two is the one that need to go
everywhere,
peeking here, there. You know? Yeah.
Okay. And the horses, the ponies that are here,
yes.
Are you familiar with them? Do they travel with you?
Well, most of them, they came from Argentina, but they stay here in America. So
okay. They
travel with us here in America, you know, between Florida and Denver and California.
Oh, okay.
Yeah.
And do you have a preference? Do you have favorites that you like to ride?
Yes, of course. Yeah. I have today. My best mare, it's called Maestra. I play her in the first chugger, in the first period today.
Is it this one or is it different?
And they're all mares, right?
Yeah, well, you know, we have let's say 70% of them, 75% are mares, and then we have some geldings, and now these days, some stalliums are playing in the game. I did play a stallion today in the last chugger.
Oh, okay.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
And why are 70% of them mares?
Because at the mares, you can, after when you retire them, you can use them as a mother.
For breeding?
For breeding, yeah.
Okay, that makes sense. Well, and mares typically have a bigger heart, too.
Yeah, you know. But, and they're like, kind of like, they mature more quick. But when a geldling is solid, it is solid.
And how long does it take to train them?
They can start to play in the highest level when they're 7 years old.
They're seven? Okay.
Yeah.
And what age do you retire them at?
About 15, 16, if they don't have any major injury.
Okay. And how often are you switching? So how many horses do you ride in a game?
Well, it's a six checkers game, and I play one per each checker.
Okay.
But plus, I have a, you know, always two or three as a spare. So I bring between nine and ten horses per game.
Okay.
Yeah.
And off the field, when you're doing practice and stuff, you're riding all of them.
All of them, yeah.
Right?
Yeah. Yes.
And how often do you practice?
We play four times a week.
Okay.
At the moment, we're playing Tuesdays, Thursdays, Saturdays, and Sundays.
Okay.
Yeah.
Great. Yeah. Anything else you want to add?
No. Just thank you to the crowd that came and, you know, and it was a good game.
Great.
Happy that we won.
Yeah. Thank you. Great job.
I didn't know Denver was a mecca of polo.
apparently we are. And Roberto that I interviewed, he's I don't know if you heard in the background there, a little kid came up and asked for his autograph, and he's quite the player. They come from, he's from Argentina, and they're all family oriented, and the families were there, and they were celebrating, and so it was really, really neat to see. You know, and the first thing that he mentioned is the connection with the horse. So, you know, I thought that was really cool. Not having, you know, any experience in the polo space at all. And that's what we all talk about with horses anyway, right? That's why we're with the horses, is that spiritual connection that we all feel, and that's what we love.
I got news for you. 99% of this audience, when they hear polo, don't think about the horses first.
Right. And, you know, and so that's why it's interesting to, you know, explore these other sports that are, you know, with horses. And if you think about it, I mean...
No, that's not what I meant. It was the hot polo players, they think, for first.
Oh. Okay, we're going to talk about this real quick. These guys were not... Well, Roberto was pretty hot, but he's married, so he's off limits. But the rest of them really weren't that hot.
See, they keep them in Florida and California, and then you get the second string out there in Denver.
Oh, okay. Well, gee, thanks. I was all prepared for like all these hot guys, and yeah, I was a little disappointed. I was like, well, you guys aren't that hot.
You need to go further west. That's where your problem was. I'm glad you got to see a match, though. Polo's fun. Did you go out there and stomp divots and everything?
Yes. Well, I was photographing, is that the word?
It is now.
This morning. It's going to be a word this morning. Sometimes I make up words on the show. You know, it's just how it goes. I was photographing for 303 Magazine, who I freelance for. And so, yes, I was out on the field, and I got to be, you know, right down there, and I think I was probably one of the only photographers that didn't freak out when the horses all came running at me, because, you know, I'm used to being around them. There was another photographer from the Denver Post, and so I was just giving her a little bit of horse 101, and it was really cool. And, you know, it's really neat to see and how they care for the horses, and, you know, how they work with them, and just understanding the game itself and the sport itself. So I'm really glad that I got to experience that.
Good. I am too. Everybody should see a polo match once in their life. That's for sure.
Exactly.
Well, I wanted to mention real quick before we wrap the show up today, thank you so much, Kim, for putting it together. It was a terrific show. I know it was a little more serious than we usually do, but a very important topic to discuss because it affects all of us at some point or another. But we on a lighter note, we need some ads for tomorrow, so get your ads in for Really Bad Ads on Friday. You send them to Jennifer at horseradionetwork.com. Just go on Craigslist, find some crappy ads and send them to us. And we'll read them on tomorrow's show and have a little fun with that. So Jennifer at horseradionetwork.com for your bad ads.
Bad ads, they're out there.
That's right. Plenty of them.
Exactly, there are plenty of them. Well, all right, so let's see. Let's go ahead and wrap up the show. I want to thank everybody for listening and thank our sponsors, BioStar, authentic whole food nutrition for horses and dogs, keeping natural horsemanship, building quality partnerships and lasting relationships from the ground up. Kim Baker, Animal Communicator, Animals Talk, I Listen, What Does Your Animal Have to Say or Tell You or Give You a Secret Message? And Kimbaker Media, beautiful animal, horse, nature, photography that inspires you and feeds your soul. Be sure to like us on Facebook at The Kim Baker Show. Follow us on Twitter, Kim Baker Show. And our horse wisdom message for this month is, sometimes the easiest way is through. It may not seem like it, but apparently that's what the horses have to say. So may there be peace in your spirit, peace in your heart, peace in your life, and may there be peace on earth. Namaste. Thank you all so much for listening. Have a wonderful day.